Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing, and yes, I do mean amazing, future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing amazing. This is our amazing Wednesday show, and we're going to try to chock it full of great stuff, so...
It's Wednesday.
Strap
we go amazing
in.
On Wednesday. And our topic tonight, our topic this week, hacking humanity, amazing new medical treatments. Now, some of you listening will say, hey, didn't they just do amazing new medical treatments a couple, 3 weeks ago? And the answer is, you know what? As long as we're doing amazing Wednesdays, you can figure on at least once a month it's going to be about this kind of stuff.
It's coming so quickly. We can't keep up with it. It's just that, I mean... We could literally, if we wanted to, and we don't want to because there's amazing things happening in other areas of the world, but we could make it just amazing medical treatments every single Wednesday. That's how, and so we have to pace ourselves. It's going to be at least once a month.
Just on this, absolutely we could.
Yeah.
You know, we keep saying these kinds of things. Eventually this is going to become a daily show. You understand?
We're going to have to, we'll have to crowdfund it so that we can, make this our living, Phil, and we could be on all day long, that way, so.
we could catch things as they break.
That's right. We're going to our man on the street, tell us, how is the singularity going there in Pittsburgh?
Well, Stephen, the sky has lit up, and...
I feel smarter already.
60 feet tall. Wait. Yeah. Oh, I understand everything now. Goodbye.
Back to you.
It'll be fun when it happens, though, because we'll be right there to catch it. But we jest. Okay, here we are. We're talking about hacking humanity, and I'm glad you mentioned crowdfunding because here is a fantastic story, and it shows you. Kind of the multi dimensions that progress is being made on here. Because the headline is Artificial Pancreas is First to Raise $1 million under new crowdfunding rules. So this is cool anyway. I mean, I've recently heard about a company, doing more of a crowd, doing a funding. That raised $100 million for a more standard technology getting a company going. This is just $1 million, but it's new crowdfunding rules, and wow, what a great reason to raise $1 million because you've got a company that's created an artificial pancreas. So here's two things going on at the same time, and I don't know which is bigger. Actually, I'm pretty sure the artificial pancreas is bigger, but the fact that this method of funding it, that this method of bringing it to the market is not only here, but it's working, is pretty darn exciting too, isn't it?
It is. Much less exciting, but it's kind of cool, is that, crowdfunding like Indiegogo and, I got a mental block, Phil, but, the crowdfunding like that, it's going to come to me in just a second. Kickstarter.
Sorry, you were thinking.
Yeah, I just had a complete mental block for a second there. But crowdfunding like that allows people to bring into the world, maybe not things quite as exciting as an artificial pancreas, but things that wouldn't have been brought into the world any other way often. And if in my little board gaming hobby, for example, I probably got six or seven board games that I kickstarted on my shelf here. Right. And these are board games necessarily that wouldn't necessarily have been made. And it's just, you know, if there's interest in the world for something to come into being, there's now methods that to bring it into being. And certainly an artificial pancreas, there's a lot of interest for that. And rightly so, right, Phil? So I'm with you. I'm almost as excited about the fact that the rules are being relaxed that allow people to invest in these things in ways that they would not have been able to invest in them before. So I'm excited about that.
We're going to look back. In fact, I think we already do now look back, and we'll say, you mean there was a time when somebody had a great idea and there were a lot of people who would have been behind it and there were a lot of people who would have put money into it, but it wasn't allowed for some reason. Right.
It wasn't allowed, or, you know, pre-internet, there's no way to connect the two.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And really, this business here, this particular story, it wasn't allowed because this was kind of an FTC issue, I think, before.
Right.
And I think the Federal Trade Commission has relaxed some of their rules to allow crowds to bring things like this into the world. And, of course, the trick is to deregulate without inviting problems like, you know, the FTC has been combating all these years, antitrust problems. But I suspect that you can do that. I think that you could probably relax the rules, allow these things to happen. And if there's abuse, then you just, you know, prosecute the crap out of it. I think that's the way to handle it. It's allow it to go forward and get the good out of it. And if there's problems, then deal with the problems. But I'm almost as excited about the way they went about getting this money as the fact that that they're using it to produce this artificial pancreas. And I'm hopeful for the sake of the type 1 diabetic patients that need this, that it really helps them. So
The thing is, this is a great example of how technology progresses too, because there are a lot of these insulin monitors available now, and that's a handy enough piece of technology, right? If you've got a device that can let you know when your insulin level has plunged to a dangerous level, when you know that something needs to be done. But man, this takes it up a notch, because this is monitoring that, and when you need some, it just pumps a little in. Truly an artificial pancreas. You know, this is truly a solution to that problem. And one of the things that caught my attention, Stephen, they got to the $1 million mark because it says 775 members of the public put up an average of $1,300 each to back this idea. How many of those 775 people do you think are either diabetic or have a family member who is, right, motivated?
A large portion of them. And you think, you know, what can I, with, you know, an average kind of Joe, you know, do to bring an artificial pancreas in the world? Well, it turns out that an average guy that, you know, has a few dollars in his bank account contributed mightily to this effort, you know, just a few of them. You know, $1 million, like you say, you just need, in order to get to $1 million, you know, you do, a few $1,000 donors and you're there. So
yeah.
It's
750 people with 1,300 each and you're there.
You get there. So that's to me amazing. And I love the story.
Well, and it's great for other reasons too. Obviously, the primary researcher behind it, behind the kickfunding campaign, someone with a kid who has type 1 diabetes, concerned about it for that reason. So you see, a relatively small technological breakthrough, basically combining pumping insulin with monitoring technology that already exists, put together by somebody motivated enough to do it, and backed by people who say, yes, this is a good idea. The world needs this.
I love the story so much
that they want to fix. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was stepping on what you said there, Phil. I'm sorry. I love the story so much. I could see it turned into a movie that I'd like to see on the order of something like Lorenzo's Oil. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is sort of, you know, there's probably very much a very similar sort of story behind this. Like, you know, some a parent, you know, says we need this and let's get it going, and they got it going, and now looks like we have it. So that to me is a heroic and inspirational story. I love it.
And I would even say amazing. I'm going to add that word.
Absolutely.
Okay. So speaking of amazing, we've got two headlines related to life extension. And what I like about these is they kind of bookend the complexity or the I don't know, obscurity of what it takes to address aging. The first one, you know, gives us that image of the big breakthrough. Ah, finally, here's the big breakthrough that can fix everything. The second one kind of goes in a different direction. But this story is, the fountain of youth may reside in an embryonic stem cell gene named NANOG. Was it you, Stephen? Somebody pointed out that NANOG doesn't sound like the name of a good guy in a big fantasy story. It sounds like...
Actually, I made a Conan joke about it. When you posted on Facebook, I said... Tell me, NANOG, what is best in life? You know, and NANOG would respond, "Well, life, you know."
Yeah.
You know, this particular
keep it going.
Gene is,
yeah.
Yeah, keeping it going.
Just keep it going. So what's going on here? What's this all about?
Well, it turns out that when they turn on this gene, and I believe this is mouse models, right?
Yeah.
Hailing
back to our Monday show.
Yeah, hailing back to, you know, the mice. Well, in this case, we're actually doing the mice a favor, perhaps. They're not having
make them live longer. You can perform more experiments on them. Exactly.
Poor Pinky in the brain. Well, at any rate, these particular mice are getting to live longer because what is it doing? It's preventing the weakening of bones as these mice are getting older, clogged arteries, and other signs of growing old. And there's also a particular type of a disability called Hutchinson's-Gilford progeria syndrome, right? And apparently this is showing a great promise in preventing that. And so, you know, hey, that is awesome. You know, I suspect that when it comes ultimately to life extension, it's not going to be one gene. It's going to be a multitude of genes like NANOG that we have to learn how to control in order to prolong our lives significantly. But I think this is part of the picture, and I'm glad that they found this. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, I think it definitely could be, assuming that, you know, we've got the same that we've got the same gene and that it does pretty much the same things, because you know you look at just a host of aging related conditions, symptoms that this addresses, and you say, okay, well, you know, that sounds, I'll take some of that, actually, you know, as I move farther and farther along in life, all of these benefits start to sound pretty good in terms of, you know, making bones stronger, unclogging arteries, and, you know, just other problems that accumulate as we age. The other thing that struck me about this one is that we were talking on Monday about how we get people on board with accepting some of these kinds of ideas. You know, we were talking specifically about using genetic treatments, you know, to prevent diseases in babies, but also, you know, more out there ideas like using a chip to make your brain work better. Life extension treatments weren't included in that Pew research that we were looking at, but I would guess that they're going to be, you know, a support for life extension in general is going to be somewhere south of 50% right now, if you ask people, for the same reason that they don't want blood enhancements and they don't want brain enhancements, the reason that you pointed out on Monday's show, which is that people don't think that messing with humanity is a good idea. But something like this could actually be packaged and marketed correctly, accurately, as just a general, what's the word I'm looking for? Tonic for the elderly. You know, when I was a kid, there was a product called Geritol, and it was this vitamin supplement that they sold, you know, just to old people. And the idea was, well, it'll make you feel a little better. You know, it's like you have a little pep. It's gonna. I don't know that it ever did anything much, right? And I don't know that it's even still on the market. You don't hear much about it anymore. But the idea was, you know, there's just a certain, you get, I think the phrase they might have even used was tired blood, right? You get tired blood after a while, and you just need a little zing, you need a little pep as your body slows down. This kind of treatment could be directed at that, right? You know, for the aging baby boom population, you don't say, hey, this is going to make you live longer, but hey, this is going to make you feel better, right?
Yeah.
This is going to help you prevent disease.
I've heard it put this way. We're not necessarily going to give you more days in your life. We'll put more life in your days is the way I heard one marketer say it one time. But, you know, the truth is, if they get more days too, who's complaining, right?
Yeah. So, as long as there's more life in them. Exactly. That's right. But I think it would be the former statement that could actually get this through, right? Because nobody's going to object to that. You know, people might object to artificially extending human life, but nobody objects to make sick old people feel better, right? Or anybody who objects to that is just a jerk, and you don't have to listen to them, right? I mean,
that's right.
That's a point of view that you don't have to, you know, spend a lot of time worrying about, I think. Well, let's look at this. Let's look at this other one, because I think this is an interesting kind of, as I said, kind of bookend on life extension, which is male hormone reverses cell aging in clinical trial. And I'm just going to. This is from ScienceDaily.com. Just read a paragraph here. Sex hormones can stimulate production of telomerase, an enzyme naturally found in the human organism. The strategy was tested in patients with genetic diseases associated with mutations in the gene that codes for this enzyme, such as aplastic anemia and pulmonary fibrosis. The authors say the results suggest that the approach can combat the damage caused to the organism by telomerase deficiency. Well, okay, so a lot of, you know, techno speak about telomerase there, but we know that telomerase addresses the telomeres in our cells, which have been identified as associated with and actually having some direct causal impact on aging. If your telomerase levels go down, your telomeres start to get shorter and you get older. Is that too simple a statement, or do you think that's accurate?
Well, imagine if I don't know. Every single time a cell divides, the DNA there is a tendency of the DNA to lose little bits of it. Okay, and the telomerase is the frame around the picture. Instead of you whittling into the picture itself, right, and losing a great piece of art, you are just whittling away at the frame. Okay,
right.
Every single time with every single division. And so if the longer the telomerase string is, and then the more protection, the good stuff, the work of art is within the picture frame, right?
Exactly.
So I'm trying to come up with a metaphor that helps, but maybe that's the closest I can come up with that. And so anything that can be done to lengthen telomerase. You know, particularly in someone who's been around a while to have some cell divisions, in their body, if you can re-lengthen the telomerase, then you've bought them some time before the cell divisions start breaking into the code, right?
Exactly.
That makes them who they are. So,
yeah. And what's exciting here is that as you said, the telomerase is going to determine how quickly or how slowly these telomeres are shrinking. We all have shrinking telomeres right now, with the possible exception of a few people who are undergoing some kind of drastic research interventions. That's what happens if you're a living human being, right? Your telomeres get shorter every year, and then you die. Sorry, that's a bummer, yeah. But that's what happens. Unfortunately, if you have telomerase deficiency, it happens much faster.
Right.
That is essentially you're suffering from, at that point, you're suffering from accelerated aging at that point. And that's bad. Obviously, if we can do anything to increase telomerase, if we can do anything to reduce the speed at which telomeres are lengthening, that's good. If we can actually shorten, that's good. If we can actually lengthen them, that's better. But this intervention occurs, you know, kind of at the far end of really bad stuff happening, which is people don't have enough. They're getting short too fast. They're aging much faster than they should. That all sounds bad. But how wonderful that the treatment for it is something fairly well understood, fairly common, and easy to implement. You know, basically, you start treating patients who have this deficiency with an androgen, testosterone, or something like it, and the problem gets righted. You know, suddenly they have enough telomerase, and the shortening goes down. So this is, this is like backing into life extension. But I think sometimes
that's maybe the way that it happens, though, Phil. I mean,
yeah.
We learn to treat diseases of the heart. We learn to treat telomerase shortening diseases and obesity and diabetes and all. And and slowly but surely, we have the, you know, you put it all together and you got the big picture of how to perhaps alleviate some of what happens to us as we've celebrated a few too many birthdays, right? So
exactly right. Yeah, you begin with something simple like this, which is just understanding how to slow it down, right? How to keep it from, just how to keep it from being sped up, right? Just putting the brakes on excessively rapid telomere shortening is a great start. Because, as you said, Stephen, it's like, well, it's one piece of the puzzle. You get that one in, and then you start looking at some others. Then, in parallel, we're doing things like, well, I'm not saying life extension. I'm just saying, you know, if you're on the north side of 70 and you'd like to just feel a little bit better day to day, just try our NANOG treatment and see how it treats you. You know, it's like you plug in more and more of these solutions, and without ever anyone saying, aha, eureka, the fountain of youth, we've solved aging, we get there, you know, incrementally with one, either big discovery in the case of NANOG or one nice treatment that we wouldn't have ever thought of in this case.
Wouldn't it be awesome if we wake up someday and say, no one ever talks about life extension anymore, but have you noticed how the average age is now 120?
Exactly.
We just back into it, perhaps.
Maybe we'll get to life extension one of these days. But meanwhile, it's like everybody's getting really old. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. All right.
But,
well, what's our next one here, Phil?
We got one more. This is really fun. HoloLens hack fools the brain into fixing itself. This is just wonderful, wonderful example of kind of the cross-fertilization that you get when new technologies come along, and they can be applied in ways that you never would have thought of. The HoloLens, it's a standalone headset Microsoft developed that lets you see virtual objects and environments as though they exist in the real world. So it's kind of it's an AR technology, or it's a virtual VR technology. It's designed for those kinds of applications. But they found that a Microsoft employee who has a very specific, very distinct condition that involves a misfiring of the brain, it's called myoclonus dystonia. The brain starts working in a damaging pattern, and these people suffer from uncontrollable muscle spasms. But this individual discovered that she could regain control during a spasm by looking at her partner's feet, okay? So this is interesting. It's like you focus your brain differently, and voila,
her partner apparently was not having muscle spasms, so apparently focusing on the still feet of their partner helped them overcome the muscle spasms in their own legs and feet, I guess. That's weird, but...
Exactly right. Yeah, you see, there's actually, if you follow the link, there's a great little... animated GIF here that shows a guy responding to a mannequin hand being hit by a wooden paddle, which is not his hand, but it's where his hand ought to be. And this kind of automatic response that the brain has to external stimuli that aren't even stimulating us, but that we think are occurring in our own body, is actually a very profound, it's a well-documented medical effect. Well, so this is great. A fairly straightforward and unusual and unexpected treatment for these spasms is if you look at feet that aren't spasming, your feet stop spasming. Well, what if your partner's not there, right?
Right.
What if the thing that you need to be looking at is not easily available in your field of vision? HoloLens can solve that problem for you, right? So if you're experiencing that spasm, you can look down and you see your feet still, and the magic kicks in, right? Your brain responds to that and stops the spasms. It's all a misfiring of the wiring in the brain. This actually provides your brain the opportunity to straighten out its wiring in this one case. Well, that's beautiful in and of itself, but obviously the implications go far beyond this. There are many, many conditions that potentially where people would benefit from being able to receive the right visual stimulus. And I think go ahead.
I was just thinking, what if a person had lost a limb, okay, and they needed to train themselves for how to operate a prosthetic that they don't yet have, okay?
Right.
And perhaps let's say it's an arm. Let's say it's a right arm, and that someone is retraining themselves, and their prosthetic will be controlled by the muscles in the right chest, okay, which is how they do a lot of these the fancier prosthetics these days. They're tied into the musculature of the pectoral muscle usually, and so you have to learn to control your pectoral in such a way that you can operate this prosthetic. Well, you could go ahead and have the things attached to your chest and plug into the system, and you could be working in virtually a prosthetic and training yourself in advance of actually receiving the prosthetic.
Absolutely. Let me read a section from the linked story here. It says, during the recent hackathon experiment, participants were equipped with the HoloLens and trained with both visual and audio cues. As they repeatedly observed normal bodily function, and as they worked to incorporate these movements into their own physicality, the participants were able to forge new connections, which got stronger over time. Exactly what you're talking about, Stephen.
Right.
People could, that's difficult work, and this appears to be a really tremendously helpful technology towards, making that a little easier and helping people.
It's kind of biofeedback taken to the next level, and the experts in those fields will find all kinds of applications for this sort of thing. This is neat. I love this.
You know, when you think about the medical applications for VR, right, we're all thinking about virtual surgeons and modeling the body and all that kind of stuff. This is the sort of thing that never even occurred to me. And what that says is, to me, we're going to see more of these. We're going to see more interesting benefits from these kinds of technologies in areas that we never would have guessed. And you know what that is, Stephen?
That is amazing.
That is absolutely amazing. You are correct. And that does it for this edition of The World Transformed. We're going to be back on Friday talking about the universe, and Stephen talking about why you're wrong about the universe. So I hope I hope you have some time to prepare yourself.
I'm going to have to rethink everything on Friday.
Yeah, we're going
to
We only do it because we care. Thanks. Thank you all for being with us. We will be back on Friday, and until next time, live to see it.